You are listening to Serve, Protect, Lead, a podcast from the International Association of Chiefs of Police, where you will hear from IACP leadership and police leaders across the globe sharing wisdom, insight, and perspective.
Howdy once again. I'm David Shipley, Executive Director of the Colorado Information Sharing Consortium, back with you to moderate this concluding Ask the Expert panel discussion regarding the IACP CJIS policy modernization effort in versions 5.9.1 and 0.2. As you know, the FBI policy is changing to meet modern challenges impacting American public safety entities like yours. Aided by the Advisory Policy Board, APB, which is comprised of public safety executives from around the country, the CJIS division of the FBI has done its level best to improve CJIS policy intended to help protect all criminal justice data nationwide and beyond. The purpose of our podcast is to present information regarding the CJIS policy, something that applies to all public safety personnel, in a stimulating and value-adding way. Our expert panelists today are from the Athens-Clarke County Police Department in Georgia, speaking of a member of the Advisory Policy Board, Deputy Chief Keith Kelly, co-vice chair of the LEIT CJIS Modernization Working Group, and an esteemed member of the FBI APB. Welcome to the podcast once again, sir.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Good deal. Please also welcome Mr. Donnie Sowen, a law enforcement subject matter expert and new business development executive for CPI, or Computer Projects of Illinois, and a part-time patrol officer in Wilton, New Hampshire. Many thanks for joining us again today, Donnie.
Thanks, Chip.
Please also welcome Mr. Scott Wilcox, a senior fellow at the Center for Digital Government, a retired lieutenant colonel with the New York State Police, and the former New York State FBI, APB rep, and CSO. It's great to have you aboard, Scott.
Thanks, Chip.
Another welcome to Stephen White, the tall, talented ISO for the Missouri State Highway Patrol.
Thanks, Chip.
You betcha. I'd also like to welcome Leela McNeil, who is the hardworking and gifted CSO for the state of Idaho. Leela, you're going to add quite an interesting perspective today.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Last and most, we are delighted to welcome a good friend to this team and chiefs everywhere, Chris Weatherly, an over 30-year veteran of FBI service, the very personable and affable FBI CJIS Division Information Security Officer. You know, we in this working group often direct specific CJIS-related questions Chris's way as the FBI CJIS policy expert. Often his best answers start with, "It depends," for reasonable context. Say, Chris, how long does it take for electricity to pass through a 10-car train?
Well, Shep, I guess it would depend. It all depends on the conductor.
You make an excellent point. Okay, yes. Now, today, the panel will answer your questions from our previous CJIS policy reviews. All of this round of questions generally relates to the entire series. Our expert panel is ready, willing, and able, so let's dive in, shall we? So let me give you your first question. Do you know of any states where public health officials can access state CJIS data? Leela, you're from Idaho. Any chance that we can get you to start this ball rolling?
Sure. As Chris would say, well, it depends. It depends on what the need is for. Each state is going to be different, but there are ways for this access to be accomplished.
Donnie, you see this quite often in your business.
I do, Chip. There's quite a few states actually that do this. More often than not, I see it for purposes of children, whether it's placement or immediate services. They have to remove the children from a home or from a situation. Sometimes it's housing authorities, which actually coincide with that. Usually it's because of children. But yes, a good amount of states actually do have access.
All right. Well, that gets at least one of our listeners satisfied that there's updated information. Now, let me ask you this. Here in Colorado, we use a commercial service or a cloud suite of products for emails, document storage, and sharing of information. So are we required to have government cloud storage, or is commercial storage good enough? In other words, do we need cloud storage to be CJIS compliant?
Hey, Chip, it's Chris. I'd like to start answering this one if I could. Back in 2017, the CJIS APB made a decision that they wanted criminal justice information to be accessible to them at all times, and they wanted it to be within areas of the country, areas of the continent that they could access. And in 2017, they made a change to the CJIS security policy that said, if it's criminal justice information, regardless of its encryption, that it must stay within the U.S., U.S. tribes, U.S. territories, or other APB member countries. And at that time, and still currently today, the only other APB member country is our friends to the north in Canada. And in 2017, the only way to accomplish that was to actually, in a cloud situation, was to actually hold the information in a government cloud, you know, a cloud that was within the confines of government, if you will. Cloud service providers have evolved and now allow their customers, i.e. criminal justice agencies, non-criminal justice agencies, to select the regions when they're establishing their cloud presence, to select the regions where they want that information to stay. So now it's up to the customer to select the regions where they want their information to be housed. And that offering is available on commercial cloud service providers. So the requirement to use government or commercial, there is none. You can use a commercial cloud, but you need to be cognizant of where your data is going to reside, still meet that requirement that it must reside within the U.S., U.S. tribes, territories, or other APB member countries.
Scott, you had some thoughts on this, too.
Yeah, sure. When looking at cloud, and certainly things continue to evolve, that understanding agreements that need to be in place and timing of those agreements, especially in consideration of the evolution of the policy as we're going through and doing the modernization, are really important. I spent considerable time negotiating cloud services with some of the larger providers, and I would say it's incumbent upon anyone securing the services to really dive in and understand the contractual language that's involved with securing them. You know, having a security addendum and having somebody sign it is fine, but some of the larger vendors will want to elaborate within the contract around responsibilities, other things than, and not just their responsibilities, but also what they're going to try to make you responsible for, which is something that, you know, we've had at times, I've had lengthy negotiations that have gone on for months and sometimes into years trying to work to accurately define and to understand and only assume the responsibility that the agency should have and should actually take. And some of the larger vendors, I do believe that you do have to be careful. Not saying that anyone is nefarious, but they do have interests and you know they want to sell product. And sometimes they'll have something boilerplate, even if another agency or entity has approved it and they tell you that. You know, you want to actually read and understand what you're going to be signing on for. Okay. So being careful with contracts, understanding things and paying attention to the evolution where you're not necessarily locking your vendor in for something that may change as well with the evolution of the policy, especially with as much change as happening with it now.
Chris, that might have some effect with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Scott brings up a great point. When you're signing on with a cloud service provider, make sure that you look at that service level agreement and understand exactly who is accomplishing what. And I wanted to come back to something. You know, I spoke in my answer about storage of criminal justice information being in a government or commercial. But when you move into a cloud service environment, you still need to maintain CJIS compliance, even, you know, even though your services are within a cloud arena. So definitely I wanted to come back to that to not limit my answer just to storage of criminal justice information, but everything dealing with the CJIS security policy. Once you move it into a cloud environment, it still has to be evaluated and compliant. Yep.
Steve, does that change the view from the state point of view?
No, I think it really comes down to, you know, who has access to unencrypted CJI. And so, you know, looking at that shared governance model, you know, at what level of cloud services are you really working at, you know, so you need to really look and make sure that you, as Scott had said, is that you clearly define in those agreements who's responsible for what, and to make sure that that you cover all the aspects of the security policy.
Donnie, we had talked a little bit about it too from the commercial perspective. Anything to add?
Yeah, basically, I mean, the short answer is yes, you need to be compliant. And yes, if it's your data and you're the agency head, whether it's a state level or local level, you're responsible. Ultimately, it's on you. So do your homework. Make sure that the company that you're going with is reputable, is reliable, and is flexible enough to meet the ever-changing CJIS policies, right? We all need this data, and we need access to it. And it's great to have a cloud type of service available because it frees up a lot of money for a lot of agencies that don't want to be in the hardware business anymore. But you still need to make sure that data is secure and accessible only by the people that are supposed to get it.
We had talked during our rehearsal time, and we had discussed some specific questions with regard to given providers. And the question that ultimately boiled out of the discussion was, are the security policy provisions trying to drive agencies to a cloud-hosted environment?
Hey, Shep, this is so. Chris. And I'm going to say no. Yeah, I agree with Donnie right there. No, definitely not. These requirements are not trying to drive agencies to a cloud-hosted environment. Absolutely not.
Scott?
Just taking a step back to just the general discussion on cloud just for a moment. And one thing that I think listeners should maybe explore, and this probably will vary considerably state by state, is that like in New York, we would have contracts that local agencies, you know, I was with the state police, but we would negotiate and then have those contracts available to the localities as well. I would recommend anybody that may leverage something like that, if your state does secure services, it's a vendor that you're interested in, and they have offerings that you want, to look into whether or not there is a state contract where CJIS compliance is built in to the agreement that maybe the state has with that vendor. But at the same time, depending on the vendor, the contract, the agency will also want to do due diligence and make sure that all the rest of their needs are going to be covered as well. But having that built in is sometimes helpful, and you can leverage at the state level as a local agency something that's already been negotiated with that CJIS systems agency in the state.
You know, Chris, I'm reminded that we had a discussion about SaaS and PaaS and IaaS, and is there something that's valuable in that former discussion that you can toss in here?
Yeah, and it goes back to what Scott was saying, you know, that service level agreement. What cloud offering are you actually contracting with? Are you having infrastructure as a service? Is it platform as a service, software as a service? Know exactly what you're buying into and what the cloud service provider is offering, what they're responsible to help you meet your compliance. Because I like the way Donnie said it, right? That ultimately, when the FBIC just audit unit comes out to look at an agency, they're not looking at your cloud service provider. They're looking at the agency. It is the agency that has the ultimate responsibility. So when we get into the differences of those cloud service offerings, more or less, we get into encryption of keys, management of keys, who has the ability to have the ability to unencrypt that data. And also look at your personnel security. This may be going, a little further into future podcasts, but looking at that personnel security, who has the ability to get access to that unescorted access to that unencrypted data? And if you're in a SaaS solution, software as a service solution, your vendor is going to have more of a chance to have unescorted access to unencrypted data. So, you know, right in line with what Scott was saying, know exactly what you're signing up for, what's in your service level agreement. And then, like Donnie was saying, the agency is ultimately responsible. So.
Outstanding. Well, that leads us into a couple of questions that I think are a little less technically directed, but will be incredibly practically valuable to our listeners. Is the FBI producing a checklist of sorts so agency project managers can use it to make sure they're not missing any of the policy updates?
Chip, we produce, when we release a new version of the CJIS security policy, we produce what the deputy FBI CJIS ISO Jeff Campbell has referred to as the stuff without the fluff. It is the requirements companion document, and it simply lists the requirements. It also has a cloud matrix on it listing who has the highest capability or the highest ability to meet that requirement. And it also has, we've produced an Excel version of that, which allows agencies to download that Excel spreadsheet, and pieces of it are unlocked. The implementation column is unlocked, allowing agencies to put in there how they implemented this particular control. And that's going to build into future policy revisions of how did I implement this control, system security plans. It'll also help during incident response and all that. So when we publish a new version of the CJIS security policy, we're sending email notifications out to the CJIS systems officer of your state, so know who that person is. We send a copy to your CJIS state information security officer. Certainly, Stephen White is representing those today. On the non-criminal justice side, your compact officers, the compact counsel, they are getting notified as well. This most recent version, we also released a copy to the IACP CJIS security policy working group, right? We wanted to make sure that this group had awareness that a new version had been released. So I guess you want to know who those people are within your state, your CJIS systems officers, your CJIS information security officers, your compact officers. They are getting those releases of the CJIS security policy, and that requirements companion document is going to be that stuff without the fluff and sort of in a checklist fashion, if you will.
Leela, you have a unique take on this as a CSO, right?
Yes, this is something that the APB members have asked, as well as the Compact Council has asked for a short list or a checklist or an easy button. And unfortunately, there isn't one. But from my understanding, is each state is working and perhaps working together to come up with something that will help the locals keep track of all the changes and what they need to do.
Steve, you kind of looked at it from a Missouri standpoint as well, with a practical thought or two.
Right. Yeah, I think that it is really state specific. The priority list, that was a great addition. That helps us, kind of define what we need to be working towards. But you also see, some states may be taking statewide approaches, right? So we may be doing multi-factor for all of our local agencies. So again, we can adjust that checklist and make it, more specific to the state, saying that maybe, in the state of Missouri, we're going to cover that. Or, in some other state, they may not cover it. So it's now a priority for another agency to take care of.
Okay, well, that brings me to another practical question. And, one of the things that we like to do on the working group is we get to some of our real practical people. And, Keith Kelly tends to be very practical, given he's at the top of an agency that's needs some practical help. Can agencies apply for extensions if they won't be meeting upcoming deadlines? How do you see that from your point of view, Keith?
Well, we certainly do everything we can to make sure that we're going to meet these deadlines, but occasionally things pop up, things happen, or we may not be on top of a particular issue. And that's where we do look for the opportunities to seek out and ask for an extension. So we always appreciate when those are followed through on, but we do the best we can to meet standards and be educated on things that are coming ahead of us.
Now, Chris, in our discussions and certainly over time, we've learned that really there's no formal extension process, but there is a process in place. Can you help us with that?
Absolutely, sir. Stephen White previously mentioned the priorities of controls. With the latest revision of the CDS security policy version 5.9.5, priorities are listed on those controls, and the priority ones need to be implemented in near term. They knock down your cybersecurity risk immensely if you follow through and implement those controls listed as priority ones. Now, starting October 1st, 2024, the FBI CDIS audit unit will be looking at those priority ones and the existing controls, existing being controls that were within version 5.9, dated back in 2020. But if an agency is found to be non-compliant with any of those priority ones or the existing 5.9 controls, it will be noted by the FBI CDIS audit unit. It will be presented in front of the Compliance Evaluation Subcommittee, the APB. And while the FBI strives to not, you know, turn anyone off from receiving this very valuable information, a point of action and milestone or a POAM will be created for that finding. And every 6 months, the agency will be asked, you know, according to your plan, according to your plan of action, you know, are you going to hit your milestones for implementation? So while there is no application for extensions, you know, the Bureau is not looking to turn anyone off. We want to work with the nation to make sure that everybody becomes compliant and it just enhances the security of our infrastructure nationwide.
To the best of your knowledge, Chris, the auditing process is going to be essentially the same from the FBI's perspective across the country, or might it differ state to state?
It could differ state to state, but the FBI CGIS audit unit will be looking at those priority ones and those existing controls that were evident within version 5.9. As we've stated many times before in this podcast, the CGIS security policy is the minimum set of requirements for the protection of criminal justice information. States can go above and beyond that, and they would have their own auditing criteria. When it comes to applying for extensions or meeting, you know, if they're not meeting those upcoming deadlines, the state will be looking to make sure everyone within their state is compliant by the time they are up for an FBI CDIS audit and would want to make sure that they are compliant then. And if not, then we'll go through the same process. You know, I would imagine a state would set up a routine check with that local agency to make sure that they are meeting compliance or at least moving toward compliance. But at the federal level, it would be with the process that I explained previously.
Well, I think that's going to be a large help to most agencies hearing that from you. Appreciate it, Chris. In fact, I think that the visit today has, I'm smarter about CGIS policy. And I'm hoping all of our listeners have the same, at least the same feeling. The panelists, thank you for your professionalism, your flexibility, and your skill. We appreciate your efforts. Well done, all of you. Our sincere thanks once again to the members of our esteemed panel, Chris Weatherly, Donnie Sawin, Leela McNeil, Scott Wilcox, Stephen White, and of course, Chief Keith Kelly. Thank you all for answering questions in support of the agencies using this highly complex and vital policy. These podcasts will be excellent references as agency leaders implement the CGIS policy updates now and into the near future. Our next effort, in case you're breathlessly awaiting new podcasts, will cover CGIS policy revisions listed in versions 5.9.3, 0.4, and 0.5. And then, according to Chris, 6.0 is not that far behind. Listeners, please leave a review, ask some more questions, and then anticipate more additional podcasts in the coming weeks. In addition to the fine panelists who made these podcasts possible, I would also like to personally thank our fearless working group chair and producer, James Emerson, my co-vice chair, Keith Kelly, and task team leader, Jim Buckley, and task team leader two, Rick Scott, for their outstanding leadership and vital contribution to all of this series of podcasts. We hope you all fare well as you implement the new CGIS policy updates. And until next time, which we hope will be soon, may your thoughts be as glad as the shamrocks. May your heart be as light as a song. May each day bring you bright, happy hours that stay with you all the year long.